I want to welcome into the studio now Councillor Alison Gilliland. Good morning, Alison.
Good morning, John. Happy New Year to you and your listeners.
And thanks very much for coming in.
No problem.
And we have a few things to talk about, so we'll get straight into it. Will we talk about first the Bus Connects as information evenings, which would be of great interest to listeners?
Yeah, Bus Connects at the moment, you will remember they had a consultation around the changes in bus routes there during the summer. Now they're consulting on what they're calling core bus corridors, and two in this area in particular would be the Clongriffin to the city centre core corridor and the Swords to the city centre one. So tomorrow night in the Hilton Hotel is the Clongriffin one, and that's a rolling information meeting from 3 to 8pm. And the Swords one is in the Carnegie from on Friday from 3 to 8pm as well. And basically residents along those corridors can go, they can see the maps and they can talk to a Bus Connects personnel. And there are some significant changes. On the Clongriffin to the city centre one, we're going to see the proposal that the Darndale roundabout and the Artane roundabout will both be changed into significant signalised junctions.
This will be a connect.
Yeah, it's to allow, I suppose, a more efficient and effective bus corridor along the Malahide Road.
Yeah.
So instead of depending on them and the flow of traffic around those roundabouts, they're going to change them into signalised junctions. And we'll also have a proper cycle route along that line as well. So they're the two major junction roundabout changes. And then on the Swords, the city centre one, I suppose the big one, big proposal is the removal of the southbound vehicular lane through Santry from Omni right down to Chantala Road to the bridge down there. So effectively that would mean that anyone coming out of the Omni shopping centre or out of Shannon Road would not be able to turn right. And the big concern up there is particularly with residents in Lorcan Road.
Yeah, is that going ahead? That's the Swords Road, are going to make it
one way. That's the proposal. They want to make it one way, so you'll have buses only going down through there but not cars. And they've indicated that the cars will be diverted around the Coolock flyover. They'll come in the M1 there and down by Whitehall. But we all know
that's not
that they're going to rat run through Lorcan Road. Now, we had a meeting last night and they've indicated they do have an alternative proposal. And however, it would allow the vehicles to go through Santry into the city centre as they do at the moment. It would also allow a bus lane independently, but it would mean the removal of some part of the gardens on either side of that road.
Yeah, this whole plan is very, very controversial.
You know? It is very, very controversial, and I suppose it's a lot of change.
Yeah.
And it's impacting on local residents. It's going to impact on local businesses. Businesses in Omni are concerned that if there is that inconvenience for vehicles, they just won't come up to the Omni shopping centre and they're going to see a reduction in footfall. So they're going to publish the alternative where that will see the removal of gardens either side at the end of this week. So people in Santry will be able to look at both. And I suppose the last thing we want is the residents that will be affected by the rat running or in Shannon and not be able to take the right hand turn saying, oh, well, we should take it off the gardens in Santry Village, because that would resolve it for them. But we also have to understand that to have part of your garden removed is going to be something the residents are going to have to think long and hard. There will be compensation for it, and we're hoping there'll be a special meeting where everyone can come together and look at both options and have a discussion about which is best for the local community and everybody from both a bus efficiency point of view, residential communities and also the businesses up there.
Yeah, and then footpaths. Are you going to take away the footpaths? There'll have to be a footpath.
Yeah, there will be a footpath. Yeah. What they'll do is they'll take part of the garden and probably a metre on either side that will allow them put in two lanes, because you know coming down Santry Village there is only one lane and both the buses, now it's quite a wide lane, both the buses and the cars use it just for that short strip. So it would be ideal, I suppose, if residents didn't mind, and I said they will be compensated, that we could have that flow through Santry Village.
That we'll wait and see.
We'll wait and see.
There.
It's a long process, and it will end up on board Planola, yeah, whatever happens. So there will be a submission process and another process by which residents can make their views known, yeah, on the final decision. Yeah.
Okay, then we'll move on now to another one of your concerns, and that's Dublin Fire Brigade and the new arrangements.
Yeah, Dublin Fire Brigade, as you know, provides a very, very effective and indeed an invaluable emergency medical services. They run the majority of the ambulances in our city. So if you phone 999, it's a Dublin City Fire Brigade ambulance that more than likely you are going to get. And indeed, they're 150 years old this year. So one of the key concerns that's still ongoing, and it was highlighted by the officers and their union SIP2 over the weekend, is that we are still running above capacity. We need at least another four ambulances for Dublin Fire Brigade, plus the crews to man them 24/7. Because the Dublin Fire Brigade are seeing now that more and more they have to call on the National Ambulance Service to help them, because they don't have enough of their own ambulances to provide the services. And we also need a technological solution to that difficulty, because it's a very manual process now of contacting the NAS and getting an ambulance and monitoring where it is. Has it turned up? Has it got to the person in need of that emergency service? And there is technology available there to enable that. So there's a bit of an ideological battle going on, to be perfectly honest with you, John, between Dublin City Council CEO and the Fire Brigade, both officers and Fire Brigade management. There's a general consensus that technology can resolve this, and that we absolutely want to retain our ambulance service with Dublin Fire Brigade.
And the efficiency that it's
the efficiency, yeah, it's actually got international awards, yeah, for its efficiency. And also we need to remember that our fire brigades, every single officer on a fire brigade tender is, if not a paramedic, an advanced paramedic. So you'll often see fire brigade tenders coming to an emergency medical situation, particularly if it's road traffic, because they have the ability to manage traffic and support the people who have the emergency. So I suppose I would call on Owen Keegan in particular to sit down and let's resolve this when the evidence is there,
yeah,
that technology can resolve this. The evidence is also there that the Dublin Fire Brigade Ambulance Service is the most efficient service we have. And it's not just people they're saving, but it's also property, like if there is a medical emergency with a fire, all of that. So it's something I would like to see resolved early this year, because it's been dragging on a little bit too long at this stage.
I was just going to say that. I think we spoke about this about a year ago.
About a year ago, we had a demonstration outside, yeah, City Hall. And as we said, we asked Owen Keegan, they walked out, Dublin City Council walked out of the talks they were in when this particular element was on the table. And we've been trying through the mediation of Kieran Mulvey to get people together and to sit down and resolve it using technology that would allow Dublin Fire Brigade to maintain the invaluable ambulance service, pre-hospital emergency medical service that they provide for the citizens of Dublin.
This is a real case of if it's not broken, Doug.
Absolutely. You know, and we see so many things that are broken and in need of fixing, but this is one that isn't broken. It's an amazing service, and it's a service that the citizens are really fond of and really value.
Yeah. You know, it is. And as you say, it's been dragging out a long time. And like a lot of things, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to talk about dragging out, let's talk about the Oscar Traynor lands. You know,
that's 5 years now, I think.
5 years. My first council meeting in June 2014, this was on the table. 2 years ago, exactly at our January meeting, we approved the document to give the go-ahead for 30% social housing on this, that a public consultation forum including the local residents of both the Lorcan side, Castle Tymon, Woodlawn, Santry Court, Alden Grange, and my own Larch Hill would be included. And 2 years on, while we have had expressions of interest examined, and we have six different tenders, sort of companies, developers interested. We still have yet to go to tender properly for a developer to take on those lands and to put a design together that would meet the needs of the community and take into consideration the road traffic constraints, the local neighbours. That hasn't happened yet. Now, it's going to happen in the next couple of months, but the earliest a developer or a consortium is going to be chosen is September. They then have a month's cooling off period, which means October. And we all know if you submit now, the landscape, particularly costs of labour, costs of materials, we've Brexit, we don't know what's going to happen in March. There could be a massive difference between your calculations now and your calculations when you're awarded this in September. Then you've planning process to go through. It'll go to An Bord Pleanála because it's over 100 units. That'll take 3 months. So I would reckon, John, we're not going to see a planning application until this time, 2020.
It's crazy.
Scandalous.
It's crazy. And I had Larkin Residents Association in a couple of occasions, and I believe the funding is there and has been there.
Yeah,
for this to go ahead.
Money is not an issue. Yeah. One of the things that I'm very concerned about, and I've raised this with Brendan Kenny, who's the head of Dublin City Council housing section, is the fact that there's one project team managing the three major initiatives. So we have O'Devany Gardens, St Michael's and the Oscar Traynor. And the Oscar Traynor lands were identified as a project that could be fast-tracked because it doesn't include any demolition. Yeah. It's a brownfield site. It's there. Yes, there's road constraints. You have the tunnel and you have traffic issues, but that it could be fast-tracked. But yet, this same project team, we have to wait until they finish one element of O'Devany before they go on to the next one. And I've actually a motion submitted to our local area meeting calling for a single project team to be allocated to this particular initiative because we can't go on the way we're going on. Like, there are people out there, not just on our social housing list, but part of this land, 20% of the units are supposed to be affordable housing. And we all know the way incomes are going, the 20% now that you need for a deposit to buy a house, that people are caught above the social housing threshold and below being able to afford a house at today's market rates.
And I believe there's different builders are going to be involved as well, because a certain company will build high rise and then a different company will be brought into.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's going to be a very, very complex project from that perspective, that there will be a lot of project management between builders and expertise, designers, quantity surveyors. Also, part of the tender is for the management of it, because as we all know, if you live in an apartment block, there has to be some sort of management company that will manage the cleaning of it, the maintenance of it. It's not like your ordinary, I suppose, terrace of houses where each individual manages their own house. So it is complex, but not overly complex that we couldn't speed it up.
And you reckon something will happen within the next couple of months?
Well, in the next couple of months, we'll see an official tender out, and that official tender will go to the five or six consortiums that have indicated they have an interest in it. They've already submitted significant documentation to Dublin City Council. The council have gone through all of that documentation, looked at various designs, looked at various traffic management solutions, looked at quality, and they're putting a tender together that will take the best ideas and tender out for what they see is the ultimate design, build and management of that land.
Right, I mean, we mentioned there that the housing list, and we all know that it's very, very serious what's happening out there. But you're saying local families are now being left to languish in insecure HAP tenancies.
Yeah.
Can you just explain that today?
On Monday, we had a housing supply report from Dublin City Council. We had our monthly meeting there. And I was shocked to see that our targets for the next 3 years of what Dublin City Council would either build themselves or build in collaboration with the approved housing bodies, or indeed acquire through the Part 5 process where we get 10% of any private development, was just under 3,500 units.
Now, this is between 2018 and 2021.
Yeah. 3,500 units. And we have 16,000 families or individuals on our social housing waiting list. And we've another 10,000 on a transfer list. And our own area here, Area B, which is Coolock, Kilmore, Beaumont, Artane, Dublin 17, Clontarf, there's almost 5,000 families on that waiting list. So when you take away 3,500 from that 16,000, or even from our own 5,000, we have over 13,000 families. And they're going to be in HAP. They're going to be in private rental because that's the only alternative. Some of them might be in overcrowded situations, staying with family members. And we know that tensions can arise in that and family breakdown.
Yeah, definitely.
Because
yes.
of that. And they're the biggest cause of homelessness at the moment in Dublin City Council jurisdiction is families losing their private rental tenancies. Because as we know, it's not particularly long term. The landlord can come and say he's selling and he can give his notice, and that notice will depend on how long you've been renting from that particular landlord. The landlord can also say he wants to refurbish the unit, whether it be the house or the apartment. But we have no definition of refurbishment. So there's no way the tenants can argue, say, well, listen, you know, there's not a huge amount doing. I want to stay on. So there's that argument can't be had. There's also no way of checking back. If a tenant vacates when the landlord says he's going to sell, if the actual property has been sold or not. Because what I'm hearing from families who have vacated because of a sale, that they're going back and they're seeing that it's up for rent again at a much higher rent.
Yeah.
Because we know the landlords can only increase by 4%.
Is that everywhere, or is that just in social?
It's in the rent pressure zone.
Yeah,
so Dublin, the bigger urban areas. However, if you look at the evidence from DAF that says rents have increased by 12%, when we're only allowed to increase in rent pressure zones by 4%, it's not working. And I've seen incidents where landlords are using rent levels. They have to provide three different rents in the general area. They're using rents from, say, more salubrious areas, perhaps, where there is a larger rent, as evidence of the market rent in a particular area. So families are very insecure. And the only alternative, given that rents are so high, the demand for rental properties is so high, everyone is competing, that many, many are ending up homeless.
Yeah, this is another thing that's been dragging on for ages, and we've been talking about it for a long time. I'm going to be talking about it again, actually, in the next half hour. Is there anything down the line? Are you confident about that?
No.
No,
I despair, John, at this stage. Like, building is the only solution. Mm. And I know private developers are now saying that they are finding it difficult to get construction workers.
Yeah.
If you just drive around, particularly in the city centre areas, what is being built is student accommodation. Also hotels, and the latest that is being built are developments, and there will be one on the Chivers site and one actually up where the Swiss Cottage is, build to rent. So that is the latest, because when you have a build to rent, or you put in a planning application for build to rent, the unit size is slightly smaller than your normal apartment block or your normal unit. And also the criteria, you don't need to provide as many car parking spaces, because ideally these would be people that might be working locally for maybe a couple of months, that it's short term lets, that you're not going to plan your life and your family in these units, and there would generally be along traffic corridors. So that would be my concern now, that we'll see an increase in bill to rent, and that will further disadvantage people who are looking to get out of the rental market and to buy their own units. So we need proper affordable houses built, and the only solution to that is for the government, for the Minister of Housing, Owen Murphy, to provide more land, and particularly state-owned land, because Dublin City Council level now, we've almost exhausted all our lands. We have plans for 95 hectares of our 120 hectares that we own, but we need more coming on stream. And we need to speed up just the tendering process so the council can build. But we also need the minister to incentivise building, to increase apprenticeships so we can get more construction workers trained up, increase lecturers in architecture, in quantity surveying, in our IT, so we can have a flow of graduates coming into the sector, and also to publish an affordable housing scheme and work with local authorities whereby we can get land, state land, and build those houses, build for social housing and build for affordable purchase.
Well, unfortunately, the clock has beaten us, as usual. I think we'll just do a full 2 hour show.
We'll do a full 2 hour show sometimes,
John. You're talking about county councils there. What happened? Like, county councils used to build housing. They seem to have moved away from that plan altogether.
Our council, Dublin City Council, the members on Dublin City Council would be very forceful that Dublin City Council build more. However, what we have seen is a fight for funding from the department, from the ministry's department for projects, and then an absolutely protracted process between local authorities and the Department of Housing with regard to project planning, with regard to funding. Like, I've had council officials tell me they've had arguments over the price of bricks, that they're too expensive. The council takes the view that we need to build high quality, long term, sustainable communities. We don't want just bricks and mortar that are cheap and shoddy and thrown up just to put people in them and reduce lists. We want sustainable communities where people want to plan a family life, bring up their kids, go to work and have a normal life, and don't have the insecurity that many families now have living in private rental or living in communities where there's no community facilities. And we've had conversations here about the antisocial behaviour, because young kids and particularly teens have nowhere to go. There's no services, there's no recreational facilities. So that's what the council is about. But unfortunately, and I'm hoping that you'll be able to develop this with Owen Brin, the minister. The ball is in his court, but he's not bouncing it in any direction, bar his own.
Okay, listen, Alison, thanks very much.
You're very welcome, John.
In.
Talk to you soon.
Always very interesting. Thank you.